An Osho Talk. The Beloved Talks on the Ball Mystics, Volume 2, Number 7.
Those who are dead and yet fully alive and know the flavors and feelings in loving, they will cross the river. Gazing at the stream of life and death, they seek integrity. They have no wish for happiness at all, walking against the wind. They kill lust with lust and enter the city of love unattached.
Man is energy, a dynamism, a process, a very creative process with thousand and one potentialities, with infinite alternatives open. Man is an opening, evolution, and with all the possibilities that the existence has, man is a miniature existence, a drop, of course. But a drop has all that the ocean has. A drop, of course, but a conscious drop. And the consciousness is oceanic, knows no boundaries. But this man I am talking about is the essential man of the bowels, Aadhar Manus. You can be that, but you are not that. You are the seed. You can open and blossom and release your fragrance to the winds. But you are not yet that. It has to be remembered. Gurdjieff used to say that a man is not born with his soul. He has to create it by effort. A man is born only with an opportunity. It can be used, it can be wasted. So all depends on you. One has to become a creator of oneself. The parents have given you a body and a possibility, but the real birth has yet to happen. And for that real birth, you will have to become your own mother, your own father. That real birth is inner creativity. You have to move within words to find your own source of energy. And not only that, but to change the mechanical channels of that energy, to make conscious channels for it. Ordinarily, energy flows downward. That's what bowels call lust. When they call it lust, they are not denouncing it, condemning it. It is just a fact. Just as water flows downwards, it is natural to water to flow downwards, down the hill. But water can rise upwards. just a little heat is needed. The water has to be heated. It can evaporate. At a certain degree of heat, 100 degrees, it starts rising towards the heavens. The same water that was always going downhill, it starts going uphill. A conversion has happened. Just heat was needed. This heat in the East is known as tap. The word tap means heat. The word tap means heating yourself. The bowels sing. While desire burns in the limbs, still there is time. Boil the juice on the fire of longing to condense the fluid. The sweetness of syrup will ferment and sour unless it is stirred. Uncontrolled heat. Feelings evolve from desire, and love shoots forth from lust. Lust is the same energy as love. The difference is only of direction. Lust moved downwards, love has started the uphill task. Lust is like roots of a tree. Love is like wings of a bird. But the energy is the same. All energy is the same. Energy as such is neutral. Unless you become conscious about it, you cannot be creative. And the downhill movement is very destructive. You are simply dissipating yourself. You are not getting any integration through it. What Gurdjieff used to call crystallization. Every moment you are poured with energy. Existence goes on pouring into you energy through air, through water, through food, through the sunlight, through the moonlight, and 1001 other subtle influences. The universe goes on pouring its energy into you. What are you doing with that energy? Are you doing anything or simply wasting it? Are you creating something out of it? Are you getting certain integrity, crystallization out of it? Or just it comes from one end and is lost from another end. There are many people who are just like a pipe. You pour one thing from one end, from another end it goes out. Don't be a pipe. When the energy is in you, do something with it so that something of it becomes a permanent part of you. Otherwise, the whole life you will be just a pipe, eating, defecating, drinking, urinating, just a pipe. Subtle juices are created by your energy. That's what sex is, a very subtle juice. Now what are you doing with it? Are you doing anything with it or just wasting it? Lust is the lowest form of sex energy. Love, the highest form. Unless your lust becomes love, you will be missing your goal. Gurdjieff used to say that there is a certain mechanism in man. He called it Kunda buffer. Just parallel to Kundalini. Kundalini is a center, but it functions only when the energy rises upwards. Kunda buffer is that center which functions in you when the energy goes downwards. Kunda buffer has to be destroyed, melted, destructured. It is a mechanism. Out of the continuous practice of many lives, a certain mechanism has arisen in everybody, a channel. The moment energy is ready, it simply moves through that channel. That channel is ready there to take it out of your being. If this is the truth and nothing else is possible, then Jean-Paul Sartre is right, that man is a useless passion. Then few days you are alive on the earth, doing nothing. Eating things, throwing things, absorbing things, throwing things. Then what is the point of it all? But this is not all. The Kunda buffer can be melted. That channel can be broken. And once that channel is broken, another channel starts functioning. It is already there waiting for you. Not that it does not exist, it exists, it has come with you, but you have not used it yet. You have not allowed energy to flow into it. Of course, it is uphill task. It is arduous. Going downhill is very easy. Going uphill is strength, awareness, a certain will, courage, trust, many things will be needed. The bowels sing, the act of loving is not an ideal dream. Loving grows from the grilling of lust, like feeling death, being wholly alive. The clay beetle, buried in the earth, lives on clay, nestling in it. Lovers know how love can overcome lust, though an uphill walk, even for a man of strength. The very courageous, the really strong people, the really adventurous become attracted towards paths of self-realization or paths of self-transformation. Religion is the greatest adventure there is. Going to the Everest is nothing. Going to the moon also is nothing. Going to the highest peak of your being is the real task. Because in the first place, we are not even aware that that peak exists. In the first place, we are so unconscious that we don't know what we are doing. We don't know what we are doing with our life. I have heard the manager of a small power plant was electrocuted while on the job. The assistant manager phoned the police chief, the coroner, and the workmen in the plant. They gathered, horror-stricken, about the body of the dead manager, stretched out on the floor, and begin to speculate how an experienced man could commit so fatal an error. "The only thing I can think of," said the assistant manager, "is that poor Joe must have picked up this terminal in one hand." The assistant manager picked up the terminal and then, without thinking, reacted out with his other hand and come into contact with. Bing! The assistant manager was stretched out next to the manager. But the mystery was resolved to everyone's satisfaction. Man is unconscious. You go on doing things not knowing why. You go on doing things you cannot do if you were even a little conscious. What we are doing with our life is just sleeping through it. Consciousness has to be evolved. The more consciousness you have, the energy starts flowing upwards on its own accord. Consciousness is the clue, the key, the master key. Lust becomes love through consciousness. So love cannot be an unconscious thing. When Bowles say love is the door, they don't mean the love that you call love. Your love is as unconscious as anything else. If it is unconscious, that's why the expression we say, falling in love. Yes, it is a falling in. The love Bowles are talking is rising in love, not falling in. It is not a fall. It is a rise. So don't misunderstand that your love is what Bowles are talking about. Your love is just a name for the lust, a good name, a beautiful, nice name. And beware of nice words, because they can be very deceptive. If you label lust as love, you will be deceived by your own labeling. Lust is when you are unconscious. You see a woman or a man and you fall in love. And you don't know why. Sometimes even against yourself. In spite of yourself, people come and say to me, "What we can do? We are helpless. Love has happened." This love is not the love of the bowel. This is lust. What bowel calls lust is this. Unconscious love is lust. Then it flows downwards. Then it moves through the sex center into the world again. Upward lust is love, but then it is conscious. Consciousness is the staircase. Step by step you become more and more conscious. Whatsoever you do it with full consciousness. Even walking, eating, going to bed, talking, listening, small things of life, but you do with consciousness. And when you are in love, you are in love with full consciousness. It is not against yourself. It is not that you are possessed. It is not that you are a victim. It is not that you are being pulled by somebody like a magnet. No. You are moving on your own. The bowels' love is very cool. It has the coolness of awareness. Your love is very hot. It has the fever of unconsciousness. We are functioning through Kunda buffer. This mechanism exists just at the center of sex. People who are living through Kunda buffer can live two sorts of lives, one of indulgence and another of repression. But both are the same. Ordinarily, the people who live a life of repression are thought to be saints. That's simply foolish. They are the same people in a different garb. People who live a life of indulgence are as unconscious as the people who live the life of repression. In fact, the more the Kunda buffer is strong, the more people become repressive because they want to control it. They are afraid. They are afraid because they are losing the ego control over their sex desire. They try to control it, but their control is like forcing the sex desire deep into the unconscious. They sit on top of it. They have to continuously fight with it. And remember, if you have to fight with something, you can never leave it and you can never go beyond it. To fight with it, you have to remain on the same level. To fight with it, you have to remain sitting on top of it. 24 hours, there is no holiday. You leave it even for a single moment and it is again there, forcing you towards indulgence. Indulgence and depression are the two faces of the same type of person. In your monasteries, you will find the repressive type. In the world, you will find the indulgent type. The playboy and the so-called saint may look opposite to each other, but they are complementary. Their obsession is the same. Their fixation is the same. Their neurosis is the same. Kunda buffer has to be melted down. What to do? One small technique will be of tremendous help. Whenever you feel sex desire arising, there are three possibilities. One, indulge in it. Ordinary. Everybody is doing that. Second, repress it. Force it down so it goes beyond your consciousness into the darkness of the unconscious. Throw it into the basement of your life. That's what your so-called extraordinary people are doing. Mahatmas, saints, monks. But both are against nature. Both are against the inner science of transformation. The third, a very rare minority ever tries it. And that is when the sex desire arises. Close your eyes. It is a very valuable moment. Desire arising is energy arising. It is like the sun rising in the morning. Close your eyes. This is the moment to be meditative. Move downwards to the sex center, where you are feeling the thrill, or the vibration, the kick. Move there and just be a silent onlooker. Witness it. Don't condemn it. The moment you condemn, you are gone far away from it. And don't enjoy it, because the moment you enjoy, you are unconscious. Just be alert, watchful, like a lamp burning in a dark night. You just take your consciousness there, just unflickering, unwavering. You see what is happening at the sex center. What is this energy? Don't call names, because all words have become contaminated. Even if you say it is sex, immediately you have started condemning it. The very word has become condemnatory. Or if you belong to the new generation, then the very word has become something sacred. But the word is always loaded with emotion. Any word that is loaded with emotion becomes a barrier on the path of awareness. You just don't call it anything. Just watch the fact that an energy is arising near the sex center. There is a thrill. Watch it. And watching it, you will feel a totally new quality of energy. Watching it, you will see it is rising upwards. It is finding a path inside you. And the moment it starts rising upwards, you will feel a coolness falling on you, a silence surrounding you, a grace, a beatitude, a benediction, a blessing all around you. It is no more like a thorn, painful. It no more hurts. It is very soothing, like a balm. And the more you remain aware, the more higher it will go. If it can come up to the heart, which is not very difficult. Difficult, but not very difficult. If you remain alert, you will see it has come to the heart. When it comes to the heart, you will know for the first time what love is. Up to now, you have been carrying a counterfeit in the name of love. When the energy comes to the heart chakra, then it is transformed into love. Once it is transformed into love, once you have felt it, once it has penetrated in you, your whole being will feel purified. You will feel virgin. You will feel so pure, so holy, that you cannot think that heaven is anywhere else. You will know it is within me, within my heart. And heaven will become a truth. It will not be theology then. It will become almost geography. You will know exactly where it is. And God will no more be a hypothesis. In that purity, in that silence, in that fulfillment of love, you will see God is. Not as a theory, but as a self-evident truth. Not as an argument, not as a proof, not as a conclusion, not as a syllogism. But simply it is there. There is no way to deny it. It is so much there that you can deny yourself, but you cannot deny God. You yourself look so faint before the reality of God that you can say, I may not be, but He is. That will be the first glimpse. Energy can rise still higher. When it comes at the center of the throat, it becomes prayer. People have been doing prayers, but they don't know what prayer is, because prayer is the most subtle and refined form of love. If you have not moved through the heart center, you cannot go to prayer. There is no way. One has to go via the heart. Because of the throat center, because it exists at the throat center and happens at the throat center, people have started making rituals. People have made prayers. They assert, they say something. But just by using the throat center in saying something to God, you are not doing prayer. Prayer is concerned with the throat center, but not as verbalization. It is an experience at that center. And the experience is exactly like when a child sucks for the first time at his mother's breast. It is not that you say something, but you receive something. Prayer is not saying something to God, but receiving something from God. God becomes the mother, the mother's breast. Prayer is a nourishment. Yes, it exists and happens at the throat center, because throat center is the center to receive. Throat center is the first center which starts functioning, because the child has to suck air. That happens through the throat center. And then he has to suck milk. That happens through the throat center. Prayer is just like sucking air, vitality, or sucking milk at the breast of your mother. Hence Jesus says, unless you become like small babes, you will not enter into my kingdom of God. He is talking about the throat center. But Christians have completely lost track of it. He is saying in a symbolic way that again become a babe. Again, start sucking from the throat center the energy that life is. Now, of course, the breast is invisible and the milk is invisible. But have you watched a man in prayer? How diffused with grace he looks. How peaceful. How at home. How relaxed. Watch a small babe sucking milk has fallen asleep. Still the nipple of the breast in his mouth, resting on her, on his mother's breast, has fallen asleep. Watch the face of the child. That is the face of the saint also, when he arrives at the throat center and prayer arises. Prayer is not something that you do with God. Prayer is something that you allow God to do with you. Prayer is receptive. It is not an action on your part. It is a passive welcome. Prayer is not saying something to God. On the contrary, it is listening to God. It is being ready to receive His gift. It is very difficult to receive His gift because you have your own ideas. You have your own plans. You go on telling Him, showing Him the right path, the do this, then I will be happy. We have the adage that man proposes and God disposes. This is simple, stupid, sheer stupidity. Just the other way round is the case. God proposes and man goes on disposing. Because you have your own plans, you never listen to Him. You think you are wiser than Him. You go on advising Him, do this, don't do that. That's what you do in your prayer. A real prayer has nothing to suggest to God except a deep gratitude, thankfulness. It simply accepts whatever God is pouring. Prayer is receiving the gift. But it happens at the throat center. It is the highest form of love. And when you go still higher, then at the seventh center, Sahasrara, happens Samadhi. The ultimate ecstasy, where the seeker is lost into the Sat. Where you are no more yourself. Where God and you lose boundaries and become one. Overlapping starts at the throat center. Boundaries become dim, not very clear cut. But still, you exist separately, you have a separate center and God has a separate center. In prayer, you are two, meeting, overlapping, in some way peripheries merging into each other. But still centers are different. The higher you go, the center comes closer and closer. At the Sahasrara, the seventh chakra, your centers become one. Then there is only one center. That's what when Jesus says, not I, but my Father lives in me. Now, the seeker and the sought are not two. The ultimate meeting has happened. The ultimate love has flowered, has come to fruition and fulfillment. If you become aware and a witness when the sex center is throbbing with energy, vibrating, streaming, without choosing indulgence or repression, if you can remain just in the middle, a watcher, an observer, this tremendous transformation happens on its own. So next time you feel full of passion, don't move in these two easily available alternatives, indulgence and repression. Just remain in the middle, and you are at a point where the door can open. It always opens in the middle. Buddha used to call his path the middle path, Majjhim Nikaya. Because he said everywhere excess is prohibited. Always choose the middle, the exact middle is the point beyond. If you can find between two opposites, two rivals, the exact middle ground, you have gone beyond them. You have reached a transcendence. The transcendence opens just in the middle. The middle is the beyond. When you are watching, stunning, like a witness at the sex center, energy moves upwards, kunda buffer starts melting and kundalini starts functioning. Kundalini is the right path, kunda buffer the wrong path. And kunda buffer is functioning. Because we have lived for many lives so unconsciously that kundalini cannot function. Kundalini needs the fuel of consciousness. If that gas is missing, kundalini cannot function. Kunda buffer functions with unconsciousness. So it depends on you. If you go on supplying unconsciousness, kunda buffer will go on functioning. If you supply consciousness, suddenly your life turns. You start moving towards the interior of your being. A deep interiority arises. A man who was extremely successful with mule teams was asked how he managed the stubborn creatures. "Well," explained the man, "when they won't move, I pick up a handful of soil and put it in their mouths. Of course they spit it out, but as a rule they start on." "Why do you think it has that effect?" asked the person. "I'm not sure. But I think it changes the current of their thoughts." If you start witnessing, nobody exactly knows how your energy starts moving, but somehow it happens. Maybe it changes your current of thoughts. It is a great shock. You try, you are angry, you are getting into anger, suddenly become alert. Shake and jerk your body and become alert and see what happens. Suddenly you will see something has slipped out of your hands. You are no more angry. Somehow anger looks foolish now. Or slap your face when you are getting angry, rather than slapping somebody else's face. That is not going to help. Slap your own face when you are getting angry and see what happens. Suddenly, the mechanism that was going to function in a routine way cannot function. You have socked it. A consciousness arises if you slap your own face. A consciousness arises which breaks the unconscious pattern. So wherever you want to change, remember consciousness is the key. Otherwise, we are living almost in a sort of insanity. Few mad people are in the madhouses. The remaining are outside. But it is very difficult to find a sane man. The differences are only of degrees. Have you watched the fact? Have you ever become afraid of it? That the person who has become mad was also just like you few days before. And nobody has ever thought that he will become mad. He is mad. Can't the same happen to you? It is told about William James, the greatest American psychologist, that when he went for the first time to visit a madhouse, he came very sad back home. He had fever. The wife was worried. She said, "What has happened? You went, you were perfectly okay." He said, "Don't talk to me. I am in no mood to talk." He slipped under the blankets, remained ill for 2-3 days. Everybody was worried. The doctor said, "Nothing is wrong." Then he said, "What has happened?" Seeing many mad people in the madhouse, suddenly a thought occurred to him, "The same can happen to me." That gave him the trembling. He was never the same man again. But that made him very alert. Inside your mind, continuous madness exists. And you know it. How can you manage not to know it? But it goes on like an undercurrent. On the surface, you manage well. I have heard a clergyman had occasion to preach to the inmates of an insane hospital. During his sermon, he noticed that one of the patients paid the closest attention, his eyes riveted upon the preacher's face, his body bent eagerly forward. Such interest was most flattering. After the service, the speaker noticed that the man spoke to the superintendent. So as soon as possible, the preacher inquired, "Did not that speak to you about my sermon?" "Yes. Would you mind telling me what he said?" The superintendent tried to sidestep, but the preacher insisted. "Well," he said at last, "what the man said was, just think, he's out and I'm in." You may be out and somebody may be in, but the difference is not of degrees. Unless you become conscious, you are always on the verge of madness, always boiling, always ready. Any small thing can prove the last straw on the camel. Any small thing, any small incident, and you may cross the boundary. To live unconsciously is not to really live. To become conscious, to move consciously, to be conscious of all that happens in your mind, to be separate from your mind, because consciousness becomes separate. Whenever you watch something, you become separate from that thing. This is the secret. If you watch your thoughts, you become separate from your thoughts. You are no more identified. And when you are not identified, you are not cooperating. And you don't go on giving energy to your thoughts. By and by, they disappear. When the host is not interested, the guests disappear. they don't come so often. Or even if they come, they don't stay so long. Gaps arise. One thought comes, then minutes pass, and another thought does not come. In that gap, you face reality. Then there is no screen between you and reality. Unscreened reality is what God is. The song for today: those who are dead and yet fully alive and know the flavors and feelings in loving, they will cross the river. Gazing at the stream of life and death, they seek integrity. They have no wish for happiness at all. Walking against the wind, they kill lust with lust and enter the city of love unattached. Tremendous sutras, tremendously significant sutras. Those who are dead and yet fully alive. How can you be dead and yet fully alive? If you become a witness of your body, then you know you are not the body. And the body is born, and the body is going to die. The moment you know you are not the body, you know you were never born and you will never be dying. So in a sense, you become wholly alive, eternally alive, what Jesus calls abundance of life, overflowingly alive. You cannot be exhausted then. Then you are not caused. That you don't have any beginning and you cannot have any end. You are perpetual energy, eternal energy. Then you are wholly alive on one hand, and because you know you are not the body, then the life that you used to think consists in body is no more there. Body is already dead. You use it, you live in it, but you are no more identified with it. Those who are dead and yet fully alive and know the flavors and feelings in loving, they will cross the river. And when you are fully alive and no more attached to the body, no more identified with the body, no more the idea exists in you that I am the body, then love arises. Because the moment you are no more the body, the kunda buffer is broken. Because the kunda buffer can exist only when you are identified with the body. The kunda buffer is a part of the body. Now be careful what I am saying. Be attentive. The kunda buffer is part of the body, and kundalini is not part of the body. Kundalini is part of you. It is part of your consciousness. So people, there are many, even few doctors have tried to find out where the kundalini exists in the body, and few are foolish enough even to prove that it exists here or there, on this center or that. Kundalini is not part of the physical body at all. And Gurdjieff was right that if people are trying to prove that kundalini is part of the body, then whatsoever they prove is kunda buffer, not kundalini. And because nobody was there to say to Gurdjieff that kundalini is part of the soul, not of the body, And all the Hindu so-called yogis, particularly the modern ones, when they write, they try in every way to imitate science. So they try to show and prove that yoga is scientific. Of course, then they start falling a victim of the same attitude, the same standpoint, as the scientists have become victims. The standpoint that it starts with the body and thinks the body is all. So they try that Kundalini exists somewhere in the physical body. It is physiological. Gurdjieff used to see that these people are talking about Kunda buffer. Their Kundalini is not Kundalini but Kunda buffer, a false entity. When you are too much attached with the body, this false entity arises. It arises in the body, not in you. When you are no more identified with the body, Kunda buffer disappears. It is in fact the Kunda buffer from where you are identified with the body. That's why sex becomes almost synonymous with life. When a woman has come to her menopause, she starts thinking that her life is finished. When a man comes to know that he is no more sexually potential, he starts feeling that now he is useless. These wrong attitudes exist because we are too much identified with sex center. If witnessing arises and you are separate and you know it, you are separate, not that you repeat it, not that Vedas say that you are separate from your body, so you repeat it, you chant it, and constant repetition gives you an illusory idea that yes, you are separate from the body, that is not going to help. Your own knowing, experiential, existential, can be of help, nothing else. If you know you are not the body, suddenly love arises. Energy starts moving towards the heart center. The heart does not exist in the lungs. The heart is not part of the body. Lungs are a part of the body. And whatsoever you have been thinking as heartbeat is not heartbeat. It is just lungs beating. Hidden behind this beat is another beat. You can think it in this way. Lungs and heart are parallel. Lungs belong to the body, heart belongs to the soul. Kunda buffer and Kundalini are parallel. Kunda buffer belongs to the body, Kundalini belongs to the soul. Sex and love are parallel. Sex belongs to the body, love belongs to the soul. The world and God are parallel. The world belongs to the body, God belongs to the soul. Body and soul exist parallel. Like two parallel lines, always together and yet meeting nowhere. Always together, running together for thousands of lives and yet meeting nowhere. They affect each other, but meeting never happens. They color each other. When you become too much obsessed with the body, almost your body possesses the soul. When you become too much detached from the body, your soul starts possessing the body. Ordinarily, the soul remains a slave and the body becomes the master. But when the conversion happens, understanding arises, the soul regains its mastery and body comes to its right place, becomes a slave, obedient slave. Those who are dead and yet fully alive and know the flavors and feelings in loving, they will cross the river. Gazing at the stream of life and death, they seek integrity. Integrity, yoga, integration, crystallization, centering, or whatsoever you like to call it, is the goal. Gazing at, that is the key, what I was calling witnessing. Gazing at the stream of life and death, they seek integrity. Inside you, there is one stream of life and one stream of death. Body is the stream of death. Soul is the stream of life. Soul never dies. Body is never alive. Soul body together, the body reflects the life of the soul. It is simply luminous with the life of the soul. The life is borrowed. It is like the moon. The moon has no rays of its own. It reflects the sun. The rays come from the sun, are reflected from the moon. But you see as if they are coming from the moon. It is as if you burn a small lamp in a room and somebody passing from the out looks from the glass window inside. The glass window spreads the light of the lamp outside also. But the light is not coming from the glass window. It is coming from an interior place. Your body reflects life. Your body is luminous with the life of the soul. That's why when soul disappears, the body is dead. The body was always dead. Go and put off the light inside the room, the window will be dark. It was always dark because it has no light of its own. Body is the stream of death. And if you continue to be attached to the body, you will go again and again falling into the stream of death. You will be born and you will be dying and you will be born and you will be dying. This is what the Hindus call the wheel of life and death. Go in within words and find out the source of life. It is totally different from the body. It has made its abode in the body, but it is not the body. That is the stream of life. Watching, gazing, witnessing these two, the stream of life and death, they seek integrity. And once your understanding has become perfect about what is death and what is life, you become integrated, you become centered. Because then no more your center is in the body. Then there is no more any illusion that you are in the body. Then you are suddenly aware of the real center of your being, of your innermost shrine. They have no wish for happiness at all. Walking against the wind. The Baals say that the real seekers have no wish for happiness at all, walking against the wind. They simply float with life. They don't ask anything from life. They simply receive. Whatsoever life gives, they enjoy. They delight in it. But their demand has ceased. They don't swim, and they never swim against the stream. They simply float with the stream. That's what surrender is. There is a beautiful song. Oh, cruelly eager, are you going to fry on fire your heart's flower buds? Are you going to force it to blossom and let the scent escape without biding your time? Look at my master God, eternally opening the buds to bloom, but never in a hurry. You are dependent on the hours of the day because of your terrifying greed. What else can you do? Listen to the beloved's appeal and do not hurt the master at heart. The stream spontaneously flows, lost in itself, listening to his words, O my eager one. The bowl said, don't try to force anything. Let life be a deep let go. See God opening millions of flowers every day without forcing the buds, waiting, never in a hurry, giving their time to them. The bowls say everything happens at its right time. Everything happens in its own season. Wait. Don't be impatient. Don't be in a hurry. All hurry is greed. And all hurry is a subtle fight. That which is going to happen will happen. Whenever it is going to happen, it will happen. You need not fight existence. You can surrender. You can trust. This has to be understood. If this becomes part of your inner climate, it will give you tremendous joy. Then you are no more proposing anything. And then nobody can frustrate you. You don't have any plan. And you don't have any goal. You are not going somewhere. You have simply left yourself into his hands, and he takes you wherever he wants. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done. Let his will be done. That is the bowels method. It is of surrender and love and trust. The bowl is not a yogi, certainly not a hatha yogi. The bowl is a lover, a devotee. He trusts that God is taking him into some unknown world, but it must be beautiful because he is taking. The river is going to the ocean. Must be going because it is his river. This childlike trust is his only method. They have no wish for happiness at all, walking against the wind. They kill lust with lust and enter the city of love unattached. That's why Bowles say, even if lust has to be transcended, it is through lust. If anger has to be transcended, it is through anger. They know the alchemy, how to change poison into nectar. They don't say throw it is poison. They say transform it. Nectar is hiding behind it. The poison is only just the cell. Find the inner content of it. Love is hiding behind lust. Soul is hiding behind the body. God is hiding behind the world. Don't throw it. It will be throwing something tremendously valuable. Maybe you are not yet aware what value is there. You think it is just a stone. Become a jeweler. What Bowles call, become a rasik, a connoisseur. Know the taste of it. Find out the ways what it is. Become alert of the hidden reality. Open the doors and go in it. It may be a Kohinoor. Don't throw it. If God has given you the stone, it must be a Kohinoor. Otherwise, why He should give it to you? Don't think yourself wiser than Him. Let His wisdom be the supreme. You trust. If He has given you a stone, it must be a Kohinoor. It must be a great diamond. It is His gift. It cannot be otherwise. So even in lust, they are not like ordinary ascetics. They don't fight. They search deep in it. They try to find out the chemistry of it. Something is bound to be there. Otherwise, why God should give so much sex energy to everyone? And to men, He has given more to than any animal. In animals, sex is seasonal. Once a year or twice a year they become sexual. Otherwise, sex disappears. Man is sexual 24 hours, 12 months a year. Year in and year out. Something is bound to be there. Why so much sex energy has been given to man? It cannot be only for generative reasons, because animals are doing perfectly well. If man was only seasonally sexual, things in a way would have been better. Once a month, a year, an 11th month, you are free. You can do 1,001 things and don't be worried about it. 1 month in a year would be enough. But why man has been given so much sex energy? It cannot be only to generate children. This great treasure has been given for some other reason. It carries a hidden possibility of becoming tremendously alert and aware. And this energy has to become love. And this love has to become prayer. And this prayer has to become ecstasy. The generative part is very minor as far as man is concerned. Something of greater value is hiding in it. God cannot give you something without a particular reason in it. They kill lust with lust and enter the city of love unattached. When lust is transformed and you enter into the city of love, you enter unattached. Remember, that is their definition of love. If love has attachment in it, it is lust. If love has no attachment in it, only then it is not lust. When you are in lust, you are not really thinking of the other, thinking of your beloved or lover. You are simply using the other for your own ends. And of course, attachment is bound to be there, because you would like to possess him. And you would like to possess him or her forever, because tomorrow also you may need, day after tomorrow also you may need. So you need a lover and you want him to possess. Love is a gift. You give. You need not be worried about it, whether tomorrow he will be there to receive it or not. Because a lover can give to the trees, to the rocks. A lover can give to the emptiness of the sky. A lover can simply flower and send its fragrance to the winds. Even if nobody is there, just think Buddha sitting under his Bodhi tree, alone, full of love, overflowing. Not that somebody is there to receive. But God is always there to receive. In so many forms, in so many ways. Lust is greed. Lust is attachment. Lust is possessiveness. Love needs no possession. Love needs no, knows no attachment. Because love is not greed. Love is a gift. It is a sharing. You have found something. Your heart is full. Your fruits are ripe. You hanker that somebody should come and share. It is unconditional. Who shares does not matter. But you are so full of it that you would like to be unburdened, as when clouds are full of rainwater, the rain. Sometimes the rain in a forest, sometimes the rain on a hill, sometimes the rain in a desert. But the rain, the fact is irrelevant where the rain. They are so full, they have to rain. A lover is so full, he becomes a cloud, full of love water. He has to rain. That raining is spontaneous. The so-called lovers rarely know the flavors of loving. A lover lives for love alone. As the fish in the water, great is the lover who can love day and night and is wholly devoted to love's intercourse, worship with prayers. The man or the woman is still alone, but a lover is formed when the souls conjoin. Ordinarily, a man is alone, a woman is alone. Loneliness is there. Even if you are attached to a woman or a man or a friend, and it is only an attachment of lust, you will remain lonely. Have you not watched it? Attached to a woman, attached to a man, but still you live lonely. Somewhere deep down, there is no communication with the other. Cut off, like islands. Even dialogue seems to be impossible. Lovers ordinarily never talk to each other, because each talk creates arguments. and each talk brings conflict. By and by they learn to be silent. By and by they learn somehow to avoid the other, or at the most tolerate. But they remain lonely. Even the other is there, but there is space, inner space remains unfulfilled. The bowels say, the man or the woman is still alone, but a lover is formed when the souls conjoin. It is not a question of two bodies. It is not a question of two bodies meeting and embracing and penetrating each other. The question is of two souls penetrating each other. When two souls penetrate each other, then loneliness disappears forever. Then a totally new world arises where you are never, never lonely. You have become a whole. Man is half, a woman is half. When love happens, wholeness happens. Poison and nectar are mingled in one, like music played and heard in one single act. The human heart, free from flaw, forever enlightened, sees good and evil, same time, same space. A child sucking his mother draws milk. A leech at the breast of a woman draws blood. Poison and nectar are mingled in one. Love and lust are mingled in one. Life and death are mingled in one. It depends on you what you are going to choose out of it. A child sucking his mother draws milk. A leech at the same breast draws blood. It depends on you. Lust is not bad, but love and lust are mingled together. Choose love. Bring love out of lust. Let your life be a life of alertness. So whatsoever you do is done in such awareness that only that which is valuable is chosen and the valueless is left. The whole life is nothing but a great effort to choose life against death, to choose love instead of lust, to choose God instead of the world, to choose beauty, good, truth instead of falsities. My heart, you are in a muddle. As the days go, your inherited riches plundered fly. You only doze around the clock, drinking dreams and living in five homes with no control. The robber rests with you, my heart, in your own room, but how can you know? Your eyes are shut in sleep. This is the unawareness. Your robber rests with you, my heart, in your own room, but how can you know? Your eyes are shut in sleep. Open your eyes. Watch what is happening inside, outside. Be alert of the death and life stream, and by, fall into the life stream and be integrated. Love springs as feelings merge, divided forms assume a single way, a pair of hearts running in parallel streams long to reach the God of loving. Baal say, love a man, love a woman, but let this love be nothing but an offering to the ultimate love, the love of God. Love springs as feelings merge. Divided forms assume a single way. A pair of hearts running in parallel streams long to reach the God of loving. If your love is love and not lust, then by and by you will find that you and your beloved both are moving together, singing, dancing towards the ultimate lover, the ultimate beloved, where and only where one can find rest. Then you are moving towards the ultimate home. If lust is there, then you are moving nowhere. Lust is like dead, stagnant water, a pond. Love is like a river. And if you love somebody, your rivers parallel move towards the ocean. Good to go dancing with your beloved. Good to go hand in hand. Good to go singing with laughter in the heart. But remember, if your life becomes a pool, stagnant, then it is lust. Love is always flowing. Love is dynamic. Lust is stale and stagnant. The essence of beauty in the mirror of love stares at his face, the formless, within this visual form. The fire cools in his hands, and quicksilver roosts on flames. Love is a miracle. Once love has happened, miracles happen continuously. Fire cools in his hands, and quicksilver roosts on flames. Love has a different world. Lust lives under a different law. The mystics have called the law of lust the law of gravitation. One is pulled downwards. And the law of love is the law of grace. One is pulled upwards. I have heard a Sufi mystic was staying in somebody's house, and he was thought to be a madman. So the family was a little afraid. The man was not reliable. He can do anything. But he was also known as a great mystic. So they could not throw him out. They were also afraid of that. In the night, where to put him? Where he is going to sleep? So they put him in the basement. In the middle of the night, they suddenly heard laughter coming from the terrace. They could recognize the laughter. It was of that madman. But how he reached to the terrace? He was put in the basement, the room upwards, upstairs. He was laughing madly. He was rolling on the terrace. They said, "What has happened? How you have come here?" He said, "That's why I am laughing. I was sleeping in the basement. A miracle of miracles happened. Suddenly I fall upwards. Hence I am laughing." The story is beautiful. Mystics fall upwards. Love falls upwards. It is a part of another world, of another law, the law of grace. Light has burst on the walls of the sky. The kind one has blossomed at last. Waking in the morning, I saw him present, appearing close to my face, flowers wither and birds flutter, and the dew forms on the leaves, the glow of the night is melting away with the rising heat of the sun. Love is the rising sun. Lust is the dark night of the soul. Explore the nature of your own body, my unfeeling heart, unless you know your very substance. Worshipping God is of no avail. The body is the home of seven heavens. For you to voyage, you will blunder, as you never learn to know the friends and the foes alive in your body. So the basic work is to know the foe and the friend in the body, to know that which you are and that which you are not is the basic work, to discriminate death and life, lust and love, kunda buffer and kundalini. There is no need to go anywhere. All that is going to happen is going to happen within you. All is given there. All is already given. Just a little discrimination, a little awareness. Bring light unto your own being. Close your eyes from the outside and open your eyes withinwards. The whole world is there in miniature. The mystics say, as above, so below. The Hindus say, whatsoever is in Brahman, whatsoever is in the universe, is also in man. Man is a small map of the whole cosmos. The limited and unlimited both exist in you. The matter and consciousness both exist in you. The lowest and the highest both exist in you. Nietzsche used to say that man is a rope stretched between two abysses, two eternities. Yes, man is a rope, is a bridge. You are a ladder. One part is resting on the earth, another part you cannot even see it. It is resting in the feet of God. Watch it, recognize it, feel the direction, and move. Start moving. Enough for today. Thank you.
The responses to sutras and voice recording on this audio format are the copyright of Osho International Foundation. Copyright dates 1953 through 2003. All rights reserved. Reproduction in any media is prohibited.